Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again.
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton. Some rhythm.
And he got it. Young Ball continues to wear him out.
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. With back-to-back road wins over the Detroit Pistons and Denver Nuggets, the Cavs have just as many road wins as they had all last season. And a big part of that has been the fantastic play of Darius Garland, as well as some good contributions from Colin Sexton. But to help me discuss Darius Garland is one of his biggest critics, one of his biggest haters and doubters, Carter Rodriguez. Papa Rod, how you doing? Welcome back.
Nice to be back. That's exactly the kind of welcome that I would have expected. No, it's been of the things that fatherhood has taken from me, ability to watch the Cavs actually is not one of those, at least in the infant stage. She just sleeps on my chest while I watch the game. So I'm actually... When I talked to you about taking the sabbatical, I was pretty concerned that I wouldn't know what the fuck I was talking about when I got back. But actually, I'm ready. I'm ready to get some takes off.
That is fantastic to hear, because I just don't know how you would do this podcast without watching Cavs games.
You're welcome for the setup.
The lob to jam, like a Garland lob to Tristan Thompson, that U.S. to Canadian
very good
lob.
Chemistry, by the way.
Loving that. Absolutely loving that. But before we launch into that, do you want to let people know how you've been doing? Let me know how you've been doing, because you just ignore me. How's fatherhood treating you?
It's good. People weren't exaggerating when they said how hard it was. But it's hard in ways that I don't think people all the way understand, because it's not – you're not doing anything. Like, that's the thing. Like, people – you kind of think that when you have the kid, you're going to be doing something, but like all she does is sleep, eat, burp, get changed and go back to sleep. Or like when she's awake, it's not like you're like running errands. Like she just got to like bounce her on your knee. So Right. That's not the work is not hard. I think it's the attention to detail that's hard. And like the just general like alertness you have to have is hard, like, because like obviously not sleeping is hard, but like even on nights I get good sleep, I'm still exhausted at the end of the day, because like, you know, like for example, like if I do get like a good 3 hour burst of sleep from her in her bassinet, and if I wake up before she does in the middle of the night, I go lunging at the bassinet to make sure she's still breathing.
Oh my god, would you say that you frequently feel sluggish?
I feel very sluggish right now. I'm a real slug. I'm living that slug life. And, you know, overall, I would say fatherhood is worth it. Kylie is a champ. Had 23 hours of labor, followed by an emergency C-section, followed by 24 hours of vomiting every 30 minutes due to the result of her pain meds. So big shouts to the wifey, who I've abandoned to rejoin this podcast. So, all the love in the world to my wife, who did all the hard stuff.
She's the champ, and I'm that needy partner in your life that got you crawling back.
Kind of our third.
You know, as you were talking, and I kind of found that setup for that slug joke, I had completely forgot about that. That wasn't on the top of my head for topics. And that was actually one of those things where I was sitting there as it happened, and I was like, okay, first of all, this is frustrating as all living hell. But I was like, is this something you do an emergency pod for? Is this something to throw up on our Chase Down premium feed? And I was really wrestling with what to do and what to say about it. Cause it's just such a unique situation, and I'm going to throw the lob to you right off the bat here and kind of see what your thoughts are on this. Cause it hadn't been something that I had put in a ton of thought into. Or at least I don't really have a lot of conclusions thought out in my head.
Who amongst us hasn't popped in a word that's original and, you know, scrambled up the words in their brain? I don't know, man. It's like a thing where it's like, I think he probably meant to say slugs. Everyone says he jumbles words all the time. You know, you hear people say how fatigued he seems.
Oh my God.
He's an old man.
He's definitely an old.
And you know the thing about old people. There's a reason we don't let them drive and stuff after a certain point. It's because everything starts to slip. And he's an old. So I don't know. Like, on one hand, no. It's very, very bad that he did that. But on the other, it's like, well, he's so old. And old people are going to make stupid slip-ups like that, whether it's, you know, intentional or not. Like, I do get the impression that this guy is fairly progressive for his age. Like, he told I read that he told Michigan players that he was completely okay with them kneeling during the national anthem.
He voted for Lincoln,
who, as you know, was very anti-slavery. Yeah, I don't know. Like, you hear stuff that makes you think he's not, like, a bad dude. But also, it's just an embarrassing, like, needlessly bad look for both Beilein and the org. Like, it seems like the team is moving past it. Like, everyone on record seems to have forgiven him. You know, I haven't done a lot of digging from people who know anything to know if that's actually the case or not. I mean, we already know that he wasn't super beloved by the team in the first place. So, you know, maybe this humanizing moment becomes something of a galvanizing force, as he had to just be like, hey, guys, I'm sorry. You know, sometimes having an authority figure humble himself is value in itself culturally. Mm-hmm. But it does feel like this is I feel like this was a I agree with you that you couldn't quite tell if it was going to be a thing where we joked on Twitter about it for a day and moved on, or like this was going to matter for a really long time.
Yeah, and
it certainly feels like the former.
Yeah, I wanted to also see the quotes in the aftermath and see how guys are handling this, because I certainly understand the old point and all of that. The most important thing is how the players reacted to this.
Whether or not it really matters how we feel.
Right. It was whether or not this is something that they can overcome, whether or not they have trust in him. And regardless of how significant you feel, because I think there's a wide range of opinions on this. And putting that aside, the most important thing as a head coach is being able to relate to your players, being able to get that buy-in. And if this was something that they couldn't overcome, that was going to have to be something that the Cavs dealt with. You can put everything else to the side and say that's the most important thing, because you got your assistant coaches and your coordinators that call plays, that help come up with the schemes and all that type of stuff. That's never on one person. But as a head coach, the responsibility of getting those guys engaged, earning their trust and all that, that is your primary responsibility. And I do think that is telling that you kind of had two of their best performances of the year against Detroit and Denver. So now that that is out of the way, because maybe there's still going to be more follow-up with that and more fallout.
It doesn't seem like it, by the way.
Yeah, I agree. I think that they've kind of moved past that. I do want to get to the fun things, which is, I'm feeling pretty good about this team. They're starting to enter that territory that I have tried so desperately to sell you on, Carter, which is fun bad. Colin Sexton, for all his warts, he has improved this season. He drives me absolutely insane at times, and then he comes up with a big defensive play or a timely bucket when they absolutely needed one. He has improved this season from last season, even with the three-point shot kind of falling to the wayside there for a while. His efficiency is still up while his volume is up, and he's playing better defense. And the game against Denver, I felt like that was the perfect display from the two young Cavs guards. And one of the biggest reasons why I loved it from Colin Sexton was he was kind of more in the JR role, where you're getting the ball and you're making a quick decision, whether that be a jump shot. Obviously, he drives a little bit more than JR did, but he was very decisive and playing well off ball. Whereas in the past, I think he's been given too much responsibility. He's had the ball in his hands a little too much in kind of that ball handling playmaking role. And I think that's where a lot of the tension has been with this team.
Yeah, I think that it, an interesting thing with Sexton, you know, I think we've been harder on him than just about anyone this year, is that it's all been style of play related gripes. You know, we don't really mind his general package as a player. Like, we're fine with the speed. We're fine with the defense. We're fine with the general can-do attitude. It's just been the decision-making that's been really, really tough. And we are starting to see, I mean, at one point against the Nuggets last night, he was 2 for 8 from the field. Yeah. And I thought, Collins having a nice game. And mm-hmm. I don't often think that Collins having a nice game when he's 2 for 8.
yeah, like, no kidding.
Like, that's, I know, I and more than anything, I was surprised he had already gotten up 8 shots. I didn't feel like he was monopolizing the offense. So the fact that he was leading the team in shots after 1.5 quarters or whatever it was, you know, normally that feels, you feel every shot that he takes. And I really wasn't feeling that. I think that the 3-point shot, I think maybe I was being a little unfair, which, you know, I tend to do when I'm feeling frustrated with the team, to Sexton with regards to how much the 3-point shot matters to him, and how much I was like, even if it's still good, does it matter? You know, in the month of December, he only took 2 threes a game. He made 11% of them.
Mm-hmm.
In January so far, he's taken 4.7 a game, making 46.4% of them. Obviously, that's going to go down. But yeah, the fact that he's getting threes up again and is actually making them to at a decent clip, he's got 2 4-of-7 three-point shooting games in the month against Charlotte and then Denver. You know, I think that kind of stuff really matters. It just felt like the role for him. And I think that when we kind of conceptualize what Sexland was going to be as a backcourt, this is what we were looking to see. We were looking to see Garland be the lead initiator almost every single play, and Sexton being the second, third, fourth person to touch the ball on a possession, and be that possession ender, not the possession starter. And especially against Denver, I don't know if that's necessarily been the case in the other games, but mm-hmm. Denver, more than any game in his career, I really think that he looked like the player that we want him to be.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's what I really liked about the Denver game, even versus the Detroit win, which I thought he was very good in the Detroit win as well. There were moments that really frustrated me, and I wanted him to sit at the end of the game. And then, sure enough, he comes up with one of the biggest defensive plays of the game. And it's kind of that roller coaster ride. And I love what you said there about him being the possession ender. Like, I think that that's how things are going to go if they're going to find that right balance. And that was also one of the things when Channing Frye took to Twitter and he was kind of airing some of his grievances with the team, which
Channing's been spicy.
Yeah, which you can kind of assume are some of Love's as well. I think that
I'll say this. And obviously we love Channing Frye. Obviously we know he is an outspoken, independent dude. I think it is fair to say that most things he's saying about this team come with some tacit approval from Love. Because I don't think that Channing would put the team on blast without checking in with Love. I genuinely think that.
Those or without hearing nice. From Love first about initial gripes and all that. But
a lot of this, I don't want to say they're one and the same, because I feel like that kind of infantilizes Channing a little bit, and Channing is his own person. But right. I do think their closeness matters with regards to the way Channing talks about the team.
Yeah, it's not like you and I, where if I say anything problematic, you guys can put all the blame on Carter. That was fed to me by him.
--CR.
Exactly. No, like that was one of the biggest gripes, was how much responsibility was given to him. And one of the things that I've talked about recently is that those that feel the way I feel, which is that Colin Sexton's eventual role in the NBA is going to be as a very good sixth man. I'm pretty confident that he has a pretty high floor as a scorer, and he's someone that's going to have a long career. But the people that want to put him into that role right away and do that immediately. There has to be a viable replacement. There has to be somebody that has earned that starting spot. And just like with Sexton and really handling the ball and initiating a lot of the offense, there wasn't somebody that was ready to step up in that role. And I understand that Sexton not really making the most of that responsibility would be frustrating for the veterans. But it does seem now that Darius Garland is starting to get more of a handle of things and he's able to go out there and run the offense. And the team legitimately feels like it's better when it's out, when he's out there and he's initiating the offense. I feel like that really starts to kind of set a more natural hierarchy with this team.
Yeah, I mean, all this kind of is predicated on Garland not being bad at basketball.
Yeah.
And for big stretches of the year, he's been bad at basketball. And, you know, the last five games or so, I mean, Mike Schmidt's just posted 17 points, 5.5 assists, 2.4 turnovers.
Sorry to cut you off, but it does go a little bit back before that. So he had that nightmare game against Boston where he got hurt early, just did absolutely nothing, 2.0 assists. Since that point, it's 16.3 points and 5.3 assists with only 2.4 turnovers. So over 16 points and 5 assists with very few turnovers for 8 games now.
Yeah, it's just everything's kind of starting to come together for him. Obviously, you know, there's still stuff to work on. You know, you'll see a couple times. I honestly think that 3-point percentage could be much higher based on the diet of shots he's taking. Like there were a couple open ones where he just didn't get his feet under him against Denver. What did he shoot in that game? 2 of 9 from 2 of 9 from 3. It honestly could have been 5 of 9, and this game could have been even
The altitude is real. The altitude is very, very real, especially in the second half.
When I say legs under him, I don't mean like – I mean literally his footwork was bad.
Yeah, no, I agree.
But like ultimately, you're seeing him make the kind of patient reads in the pick and roll. And we talked about this earlier in the year where we said, hey, we think he's seeing good passes. He just can't make them all right now because he's not used to the length and speed of NBA defenders. You'll still see that, but – All in all, I think he's doing much better at being patient and kind of getting a much stronger sense of hold on. Hi, dear. Hold on, Justin. Sorry.
No problem.
This is Millie.
Hey, Millie.
She pooped. So, as I was saying, it just feels like Garland is able to kind of not only see those passes, but let the play develop to make them properly and not get them picked off. Like, sometimes he is feeling himself a little too much. There's that one play where he drove and tried to do kind of a fancy dump off to Tristan in the dunker spot, and Gary Harris picked it off. But ultimately, he's just playing a little bit more patiently, and I think that the Cavs are really starting to reap those dividends. And when he's able to put up 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 assists, all of a sudden it just becomes so much more palatable to have him starting every possession. And he's just playing the best basketball of his career, simply put. I mean, I still don't love the floater as a general tool. I don't want him to over-rely on it when he really is going to need to learn how to get to the basket or get to the foul line. But I will say, I remember you were kind of bitching about his – the floaters he was practicing in that one video like a couple months ago about how they weren't at speed, they weren't in the right context. Like, a lot of his floaters early in the year were like really herky-jerky, off balance, not high percentage floaters. Like, for the most part, these look a little more intentional. He's stepping into them at pace. So if he is going to have a floater as part of his game, this is the way to do it. I just don't want him to fall too in love with it.
Yeah, what I like is when he used to get by that first line of defense and get into the lane, it was almost an automatic that he was throwing up a floater. He just didn't seem to have any idea when. And now he's really showing his ability to keep the dribble alive. Like, once he gets into the paint, he's keeping the dribble alive. He's got his head up. He's looking for the pass. He's kind of reading what the defense is doing. And then based on those reads, he'll shoot like a nice set floater if that's what they're giving him. He's making some really good passes in those situations. He's also doing the Steve Nash dribble back out of the key.
Yeah.
So it seems like the game is actually a lot slower to him.
And by the way, we know that that's the thing. They literally have been saying they want him to Nash it more often. That is not an accident. The staff has been pushing him towards those kind of plays.
Yeah, and he looks a whole lot quicker out there. That's the other thing that really jumps out to me. Talked to a couple Denver people there last night, including Minuteman Dan on Twitter, who mentioned that he just was blown away by how quick Garland was, which is not something you ever would have heard earlier in the season. But what I really like from him in this stretch is, do you remember early on with Kyrie when he would get criticized for not passing enough? And he would have a quarter where he's basically just passing, and then he'd get his points. Then he'd get his assists, then he'd get his points. Garland seems to actually be making the right reads. His assist percentage is higher than his usage right now, and it's basically just, what's the defense giving me? I'm going to take advantage of that. And right now, like, I do like his kind of his profile. Like, I like when he's passing. I like when he's shooting. A lot of the decisions are really sound. Half of his field goal attempts this season are from behind the line, the three-point line, that is, which is fun. I think that percentage is going to go up. But it really does seem like he's starting to see the game a lot slower and figure things out.
Well, yeah, it's funny because you say he's fast and quick. Like, he's not. Objectively, he's not a good athlete.
No, he's not.
But decisive is quick.
Dribble. Yeah. He's quick in this in a similar way to like hands. Kyrie.
But what I mean is he looks slow when he's indecisive, when he doesn't know what his next step is. And more he knows what his next step is, and it's just really, really valuable. I mean, and the thing I also love about his shot profile right now is he's starting to take those pull up threes. He doesn't need to get the switch and then step back. Those take so much more effort. They're easier to close off when guys know to overplay the shot. When he just pulls coming off of a high screen. Now he's not making those at as high of a clip as you'd think. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he's taking them, like, I actually love to see a 2-for-9 night from three. Cause that means he's taking the shots that are there because he knows they're good for him, even if they're not falling right then and there.
Yeah, and he's a lot of fun when he has the ball on the string. Like, the little sidestep dribbles in. Like, he's getting really creative with how he's generating those looks. It's not, as you said, that.
I mean, he put Mason Plumlee in the blender like 4 different times last night.
Oh, my God. And see, that's where he looks quick. Is you're right. When he's decisive and he's in complete control, that's where the basketball moves he does, the deceleration, the crossovers, and just all the tricks that he has in his bag. That's where it really, really does jump out. And that's when he looks his sharpest.
Yeah. Just really, really encouraging from him lately. I mean, I think teams like the Celtics of the world are going to make him look bad probably throughout this season. Mm-hmm. There are just going to be straight bad matchups, but you know, he acquitted himself pretty well against Chris Paul. He has looked good the last couple games, even with some tough matchups coming through. So, you know, I just think that he's making a leap, and this is about when you'd hope to see a leap from a guy like this. This is the curve. It was funny. We kind of talked about several months ago, early on when he was really struggling, we kind of talked about, I asked you kind of what baseline of play do you need to see him hit to believe in his future?
Yeah.
If he maintains this, or even takes a 5% step back from this for the rest of the season, I think I'm going to feel okay.
Yeah. No, he made some simple adjustments that are significant. He a few real small changes that all add up to him looking a whole lot better, which is something that our listeners can do as well. By no longer wearing awful, untucked button downs that just don't fit right. They look bad. Why? Because they weren't meant to be worn that way, Carter. Thankfully, there's Untuck It, the original button-down shirt that's actually designed to be worn untucked. No matter your size or your shape, Untucked shirts always fall at the perfect untucked length. Choose from styles like wrinkle-free button-downs, super soft flannels, outerwear, and more. With Untucked, your shirts will never look baggy, bulgy, too long, or too big ever again. And their website is so easy to use, they even have a whole page devoted to helping you find your fit. So whether you're shopping for the perfect gift or just trying to craft a smart, relaxed style of your own, Untucked is the way to go. Visit untucked.com and use code BLUE for 20% off at checkout. That's untucked.com and promo code BLUE for 20% off.
You know what we need to get a sponsor for?
What do we need?
Sweatpants.
I was going to guess that you said diapers.
I've been such a sweats man the last 3 weeks. And I put on jeans to go out to dinner recently, or lunch. It was to lunch because Kylie's mom stepped in because can't take the baby anywhere early on. But I put on jeans and I was like, what the fuck are we doing to ourselves?
What you need is the Canadian jeans where you got the denim on the outside and the sweatpants on the inside.
Oh my God, that sounds great because it is just a nightmare. And I've just been living in such relative comfort. I mean, the amount of gray in my life right now, Justin. Gray sweats and a gray hoodie. That's Kylie, I don't think, knows what I look like in regular clothes at this point.
Man, you know what? It was a humbling experience to have you gone because I don't know what it was. Probably just a coincidence. But we had no sponsors when you were gone, Carter. That was tough. I learned that my voice alone is not doesn't fit with monetization. It was a really, really tough lesson to learn.
They must have known that I was stepping away. Yeah. any sweatpants vendors, Me Undies, I think they sell some sweats. I'm ready. I'm ready to take that on and proselytize for that. I'd love another shot at Manscaped if they ever give us the chance. But in the meantime, get me some sweats.
Well, at least you can get the super soft flannels, man. Untucked's got those. The flannel game, I'm a big flannel guy, especially in the winter.
It's a stunner. Who would have thought?
Oh, you might have hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah.
Tough to admit. Speaking of stoners, Kevin Love has looked a little more engaged lately.
Somebody had the "you need to stop being a dick or we're not going to trade you" talk.
Yeah, I think even Bobby Marks had written where it was, Kevin Love is actively turning people off around the league when it comes to these little outbursts and everything that he's pulling off behind the scenes. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to last podcast, but I brought up that I actually believe what he said, because he said whether it's 5 weeks or 5 months, I'm bought in. And him saying
that's as long as I will go.
Yeah, him setting that timeline made me believe that he actually meant what he said, because that seems to be the window. And I don't know how you feel. It is really fun where you have games like Denver and Detroit here, where he's a big, big part of the reason why they're successful. We're going to get a lot worse when Kevin Love is not here. Even when he's pouty, we will be worse without pouty Love. But I want this to be resolved at the deadline, because if that deadline passes and he's still on this roster,
oh boy,
talking myself into, all right, I gotta talk about Kevin Love trade possibilities for another 4 or 5 months here, that's going to drive me insane, Carter.
Yeah, I'm pretty out of gas on it as is. Like, I just haven't. I mean, in fairness, we really haven't spent too much time talking destinations at this point. Like, because just like, well, we don't know what his value is. No one seems to. So let's just wait it out. I've really liked what he's done the last couple of days. I do just think that this really does draw into pretty clear view what a good liar Kevin Love is. Like, when he turns on that charm, man, whoo.
Oh, yeah. No,
he can talk us into bed whenever he wants.
Absolutely.
And tell us he's got an appointment in the morning, so he can't stay over. I just think that this is, it's still going to get ugly again. But in the meantime, him playing the good soldier has been kind of refreshing. You know, it sucks having him be openly miserable. It makes the it, you know, him lying to us about being happy to, you know, being a good soldier, the definition of faking it till you make it, because I'm having fun watching him play, because an engaged Kevin Love is really fun to watch. So even if it's not going to last, I'm going to count my blessings while they're here, because I don't know about you, but in the midst of the huge, horrible pout fests, it was like you almost forget what's so fun about Kevin Love on your team. And like, it was like, oh yeah, no, he's super awesome and fun to have.
Yeah, I needed that breath of fresh air. Probably no coincidence that Denver has been a team that's been mentioned as possibly being interested in him.
Yeah, I can't believe he showed out.
Yeah, big surprise that he showed up against Denver. I guess maybe there's some potential for that against these LA teams, but that's just not something that'll ever work from a salary standpoint. I mean, there's not a whole lot to say. As you mentioned, we haven't spent a ton of time discussing destinations because there hasn't even been an Andre Drummond to Atlanta type rumor where, hey, we know these teams are actively talking about it. The Suns seem to be brought up over and over again. And what I would want for a return certainly has gone down. I don't want to give up any assets. I want maybe a pick or a player worth caring about. But I will take either or. I don't need both anymore. I'm just ready to move on. And it certainly does help that Darius Garland and Colin Sexton both are playing a lot better recently.
Agreed.
I hope Dante Exum gets over his flu very soon.
Yeah, well, oh my God, this poor guy.
Yeah. And
I don't think I've ever seen this long of a missed time.
I mean, I've had a flu that's lasted this long, and it's not a lot of fun. But this is peak Dante Exum, because it's not like he has one recurring injury or issue. It's just always little random shit, and he seems to probably be having little random shits.
That was tough.
So hopefully he works his way back. Speaking of random shit, what the hell is going on with this John Henson Ante Zizic thing?
So yeah, it's been weirdly underreported because no one reports on the Cavaliers with any frequency, so that actually isn't that weird. But yeah, so Henson has played great pretty much every time he's been out there. I mean, I haven't really seen any. I've been pretty happy to see him on the floor at any given time. He has been replaced by Zizic in the rotation. Bayline reportedly made some comment about him just wanting the extra bulk to play Andre Drummond and Jokic. But it's pretty flimsy. I mean, I think there's pretty much no case to play Zizic, who has been okay in his minutes. But I don't think there's any case to play Zizic over Henson from a basketball perspective. Do you?
So, no. If you're trying to be the best possible team, there isn't a justification for that. It is fun to kind of see him out there just because he is so big. Depending what the lineups are, sometimes it's like, okay, well, he's just grabbing every rebound and teams are having trouble dealing with him because that's a legitimately big boy. But he's not a good defensive player. He doesn't have the best basketball IQ. He's not always in the right spots. The only thing that I could really come up with is that some team has inquired about Ante Zizic as part of a package, whether that be with Kevin Love, whether that be with Brandon Knight, John Henson, who, whatever the case may be, and they needed to see some minutes out of them. They wanted to showcase him. Chops had also mentioned, which I think is a good theory, that teams have seen enough out of Henson. I think he even mentioned that Joe Vardon said something about that teams have seen enough out of Henson, and there just might be some trepidation about playing him more minutes given his injury history.
That's when I've done any digging that I've done, you know, again, we're not reporters here, but when you ask around from people who might know something, that's the best, idea that's been ventured, is people saw enough of Henson that they feel comfortable shopping him. Now they want to showcase Zizic. I don't know.
Which is one of those tough moments where you have to just really come to terms with the fact that this season is not about this season.
It just doesn't feel worth, like, I just feel like, okay, yes, it makes sense to, I guess, protect Henson from an injury, but also he's a basketball player. Like, Come on, that's flimsy. And I don't see a world where Zizic plays his way into trade value. So is it worth the minimal chance that of protecting yourself from a minimal chance of an injury, or the minimal chance of Zizic, someone seeing something in Zizic to further alienate your, to force your coach, because this would be a front office request to Beeline, right? Mm-hmm. To risk further alienating your coach from the rest of the locker room, who clearly knows Simpson's a better player, and yeah. And pissing them off. Like, I feel like Beeline needs as many wins as he can get right now. So if I'm Kobe Altman, it just makes sense to me to do Beeline the favor, if that is indeed what's happening, and say, just play Henson, make the guys happy, because ultimately it's not going to make a difference to our trade season, and you need as many wins as you can get.
Yeah, this is one of those situations where I think the best solution would be if Kobe Altman just finds a trade now. Like, get it done before the deadline. If you could get 2 seconds, like, let's say the Clarkson returned, would you just do that at this point?
Yeah. For Henson?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. For yeah. sure.
Right. So if you can get that, do it now. Make things a little bit easier, and let's move on from there. It seems like they are fairly deep into trade talks with some teams. It sounds like Bobby Marks has mentioned it, Windhorst has mentioned it, where they've had a lot of talks, trade talks. Not all have involved Kevin Love, which makes sense given the number of veterans. I think Brandon Knight might be playing himself into some value here, which is nice.
He hasn't been super bad.
Yeah, he's capable.
And boy, loves himself a pull-up three.
He loves himself some Brandon Knight, which can be fun when he is playing well.
It's Brandon Knight time.
Absolutely. Just making things easier from that perspective would be nice. Because you're right, there is no basketball reason for playing Zizic over him. Like, that would be the most troubling thing, is if John Beeline actually believed that. Which, even if he told us that he thinks that Zizic is the better player, I wouldn't believe him. Like, I would believe that would be front office speak, because I don't think that this guy's an idiot. But it's, it's one of those situations where I hope that gets resolved soon. I hope. It is a little sad, because I think we all were really enjoying the John Henson experience. And
yeah, it's kind of nice to have that going on.
Yeah, he's a legitimate rim protector, and the team also seemed to have a good time, like, advertising him and marketing him to the fans, and they enjoyed John Henson as being part of the organization. And I think a lot of us were kind of saying, well, if they could bring back one of him or Tristan, that would be pretty nice. But it does seem like the writing's on the wall that Henson will be gone within 2-3 weeks here.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes sense. I mean, the reason you don't trade him now just to get him off the team, by the way, is that if you do go big game hunting and say, there's a world in which you might trade Henson with Love to a team like Sacramento if you were going to take on a bunch of big, long money like a Deadman and a Barnes, where all of a sudden that's like $40 million in salary.
Yeah.
And maybe they need Henson as a sweetener to get Bogdanovich back or something along those lines. So it's hard to know right now, but I do think that it just seems like while he's here, just go ahead and play him. Like, the benefits of not playing him don't seem to outweigh the consequences, though. Yeah. Ultimately, this is not a huge deal. And I will say, the fact that Knight's in the rotation again, a guy who's clearly liked by the locker room, like, that does heal the wound a little bit that Knight is getting minutes, because the locker room seems to prefer that to one Matthew J. Dellavedova.
Oh my God.
I made up that middle initial, by the way.
He is just, well, it's kind of, what is it?
Unplayable.
No, what's his middle name?
Oh, I don't know.
Go research that. I find it very hard to believe that he has any J's anywhere in his identity. I will say, it's kind of convenient timing.
William.
There you go. it is convenient timing for KPJ to be out. Obviously, we're relieved. They updated the timeline to 4 to 6 weeks, which makes a lot of sense. I think everybody was kind of operating under the assumption that that's what it was going to be. The reevaluated in 2 weeks. We've experienced that with Dylan Windler, and yeah, who is just missing.
APB out for one boot Swindler. God, how fun was that one step back in Summer League, though?
Oh my God, no, I still watch Don Windler Summer League highlights. It keeps me warm in these cold Winnipeg winters, Carter. It's good timing because you do get a showcase night a little bit here, and then KPJ will likely be back after the trade deadline, where we really do need some reasons to be excited, especially if we are in that post Kevin Love reality. And
Say something a little mean?
Oh, God. Welcome back. What do you have to say?
You know, I haven't really missed that much.
Who?
Larry Nance. Kind of forgot he was hurt the last couple games. Didn't you? Tell me you didn't.
Yeah, I did kind of forget he was hurt.
That's all. I just wanted to prove that I was right. It wasn't that I don't like him. It's just I expected to feel his absence more.
Yeah, and he was playing a whole lot better.
I don't think he's been playing poorly. I'm just surprised. I literally, it sounds mean, but I'm literally just surprised that I have not missed him.
Yeah, I mean, the young guys playing well is certainly a big part of that. Yeah. And
Zizic having a couple of decent games, and McKinney really.
I was about to say, McKinney has been really, really enjoyable.
Barring some trade that brings in five bodies, I really would recommend that the team keep McKinney for the rest of the year and keep him in the rotation. Really like what he adds. He's the most athletic wing on the team by a significant margin. The jumper's been good enough, and the defense has actually been great. So I think he is worth keeping around and seeing what you got there and actually giving some minutes to.
Yeah, so I think the takeaway for our listeners here is that what I think the Cavs are doing with waiving McKinney and Cook and signing them to these 10-day deals, I think you're going to see them do that a second time here. It's basically to prevent them from having their contracts guaranteed for the rest of the season until after the trade deadline. They want to have as much flexibility as possible, but it does seem like, as indicated by McKinney coming back, they have a decent enough relationship, and there's an understanding that with the Cavs being so active in the trade market, there's a possibility where they are going to take other guys back, and maybe they end up waiving one of those guys and keep McKinney instead. But I would strongly recommend keeping him because I do think that that's a productive, fun, young presence there for the Cavs, and provides defense at the small forward position, which is something we have not had a lot of.
Yeah, I think did they put him on Murray late in this game? No, it was Derrick Rose late in overtime. Yeah. I thought he played really, really good defense in isolation.
It was at the end of regulation where he got the big stop.
God, you when they that deli play on Rose when they put him in for defense. Oh, it was the most unfair thing I've ever seen.
I'm so done with that guy.
It's not his fault.
Yeah, it's not his fault that he's awful.
Coach's fault.
Yeah.
Stop playing him. Sorry. Yeah. He's doing his best.
I mean, as this podcast has indicated, fathers of newborn children are generally terrible.
And wow, they're not good at much. I played basketball yesterday and was basically just running in quicksand the whole time, which I'm already pretty quicksandy as a player. So
you're not trending in the right direction there.
No, it got worse.
You know what? The nicest thing about this last week or two here, actually, basically since the Jordan Clarkson trade, like I've been pretty happy with the Sexland experience since Jordan Clarkson has been shipped out of town. I think overall they've been playing pretty well and doing the type of things I like to see. They're also making it so that we don't get sued for those damn T-shirts.
Yeah, the Better Business Bureau was really bearing down on us for selling excitement about the Sexland backcourt. Thanks guys for playing a little bit better. Boy, did we need it.
Yes, because I still believe that they can be fun as a tandem, even if it isn't as a starting tandem. I think that there can be periods where they do play well. And
They just got to play exactly like they played against Denver and not any other way.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
I really hope that, you know, it's one of those things where you, as a fan, you kind of look for progress and treat it linearly, which is not a word, but fuck off. I just think, like, if I am the Cavs front office and coaching staff, that's the only good tape I show them ever again. This, do this, because this is the way we make this work long term. Because Sexton will have good scoring games, but not good scoring games like that.
Yeah,
And like that is doing a lot of work for us. And I really hope that Sexton and Garland viewed it that way too. You know, I hope that they look at that game and say that felt right. Let's try to replicate that.
Yeah, I hope that really resonated with them, and it's not necessary to keep showing them the film, because I think the Cavs would do well to avoid film sessions for a little bit. I agree. I think if Colin Sexton was put in a role where we're not asking him to create for other people and just kind of that, hey, go out there and score, do your thing, I think that he can kind of work his way back into being that endearing presence that I think a lot of us ended up buying into. Like, I bought into it. I jumped on the Colin Sexton bandwagon, and I think that he can be an effective scorer. So I really hope that that does continue to keep trending in that direction. And if it trends in that direction, it means that Darius Garland is continuing to be kind of a steady presence as a playmaker, which we really do need to see.
And let me be clear, because I think we're pretty good at eating crow when we're wrong.
Oh, yeah.
I do want to note that we weren't wrong when we were frustrated earlier in the year. If he plays like this the rest of the year and we're on the Sexton bandwagon, it doesn't mean that we weren't wrong earlier in the year.
No,
like, he couldn't play the way he was playing.
That's why I usually am a little careful, and I say currently he projects to be this. I don't say, hey, this guy is definitively going to be this, because then you're married to that take, and then you have to be like a Boston sports radio personality where – did you see how that went today, Carter?
The Kelce tweet?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. For those that don't know, apparently this guy was also a Patriots backup quarterback. I don't know anything about NFL. But he's also employed by the Patriots. He basically called Travis Kelce a pussy and said he's not a tight end. Then he caught three touchdowns and the guy was still tweeting through it. So you hate to see that, but no, Carter and I, we give the analysis without letting our biases take complete control, even though they are omnipresent.
And our bias is always hoping that they're good.
That is you know what, honestly, that's the most wild thing, is when people think I actively root against a Cavs player.
It's so funny. Like, all we want is for Colin Sexton to figure it out.
Like,
what a win.
Accusing me of not being an optimist is just a wild
thing. Yeah, I mean, it's okay to accuse me of being a pessimist, but never accuse me of not wanting better.
Carter, you know what, this was a lot of fun. It was great having you back.
Missed you, buddy.
Man, I meant to do this at the beginning of the podcast, but I want to give another call out to the Chase Down Nation. If any of you live in Minneapolis or the Minneapolis area and you want to go to the Raptors game with me on Saturday, hit me up. Email chasedownpod@gmail.com. I got an extra ticket. Come sit with me and my brother. It'd be a lot of fun.
I know that a lot of you might be a little uncomfortable being around such a controversial personality as Jules Rowan, somehow the more problematic Rowan brother. I'm certainly sad I'm not close by to sneak in and snake that ticket.
Oh yeah, because we all know, Carter, that if you were close by, you would always make the drive to come see me.
Listen, pal, chill.
Oh, this was so much fun. It's great to be talking to you again, Carter. Thank you to all of our listeners. If you guys want to support us, you can do so by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, and resubscribe. If you want to be part of our Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com, and we would be more than happy to send you a link. For those that don't know, Discord is an app where we kind of have our own little community going, mailbag questions, game threads, and just random BS.
Kind of like Slack.
Yeah, it's like Slack, but I enjoy it a little bit more. You can also support us by going to the Chase Down Premium, which is, if you want to donate to us and support us directly, 99 cents for the first month, $5 a month after that. You get access to our premium feed, which is a bunch of bonus smaller podcasts. I do a weekly rookie report where I talk about the week, not rookie report, but youth report, where I talk about the week from all the Cavs young players, the guys that I consider part of the young core. We also do mailbags and other stuff there, emergency podcasts. So if you want to support us, Google Chase Down Premium, support us that way. However you choose to support us, though, we really do appreciate it. It means the world to us, especially with Papa Rodriguez here. He needs all the money he can get. So
yeah, I gotta keep paying for the Cleveland.com tech service, guys. Come on.
That's right. I always forget.
You support our purchasing of that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you want to sell it as support
us.
So, yeah, so support us so we can support Fedor. But you know what? We appreciate it. No matter what your motivations are, it really does mean the world to us. So thanks to all our listeners. Thanks to Carter. Until next time, go Cavs.